I'm going to take the intro from the last
from the other one.
I could. I guess I could be quick. I like the last intro, but hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Truth Pace. Today is a very important episode. I have someone that I absolutely adore, thank, and am indebted to for the rest of my life for a number of reasons. Today, I have loan officer, wonderful person, preacher?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay. Preacher. I be knowing you. I be in your IG. I know what you be doing. And overall, wonderful woman, Sandra Manjow. Welcome,
you.
Sandra.
Oh my God, thank you.
Today, I wanted this interview to be an opportunity to share kind of the intricacies. Mm-hmm. You would think I didn't have a communications degree. The intricacies of the home buying
process. So that's what it is. It's the degree.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. The degree in communication studies.
I was like, I need to talk like you. How do you?
It's the study. I've studied like communication, all things with communication.
That's what it is.
How to properly, not properly communicate, but the best practices to
get the message out. You were
exactly
good.
That's the whole study. So understanding how tone, language, body language, eye contact, and context all play into delivering the message. And what I've learned is that a lot of people are poor communicators.
Yes, and unfortunately.
Even myself, I have my times where I'm a poor communicator, but I am able to convey messages really well. Part of it is because I'm really good at analogies. Mm. Most of my like reasoning or, you know, understanding of things works through analogies. And if I can't explain something to someone, I'll use an analogy to help them understand. That's like the easiest way to do it. So I'm assuming we'd probably have a lot of analogies used today to help, you know, my audience understand the home buying process. But I recently purchased a home with your help.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. It took a while for me to like really accept it. I'm still like in the process of like fully like accepting being a homeowner. But the process for me was very interesting because I learned so many things about myself, my family, about finance, about wealth through this process. And I kind of wanted this to be like an open discussion where we can talk about how all of those factors play into each other. But I think you have such an incredibly unique story. And I think your upbringing and where you come from plays so much into just your overall personality and your versatility as a loan officer. You know, not everybody, you know, is kind of willing to work with people from all walks of life, but you kind of have to be someone who comes from a different walk of life to understand that walk that someone comes with.
Right.
And I think you're one of those people. So can you share with my audience just, you know, a little bit of your background, just to kind of give some context to who you are as a person before we get into like the details and, you know, kind of like the nuts and bolts of the whole process?
Okay. Well, my dad is a realtor in Kenya. I'm from Kenya, Nairobi. So
I didn't know he was a realtor. See,
actually,
I'm learning
you
stuff
reminded
now
me what you were saying. I was like, actually, maybe I should start there. So my dad is a realtor and he had this company, Abic Properties, and I learned about buying homes from his company. Now, when I graduated from high school, everyone from our family, my cousins, my uncles, when you graduate from high school, you have to work at Abic Realty. And you don't get paid, though. But you get your experience.
Keep it in the family.
So I got an interest in home buying and purchasing from my dad's business. And I knew it was a lucrative business. I remember one time I was doing a showing for a reporter for CNN. And I was like, wow, this must be like a really glamorous thing to purchase. If someone from CNN
yeah,
is like, whoa. And I took this guy for a showing. And I was like, wow, this is big. And I remember he took me out to go get some coffee or whatever. And I just thought that was interesting. And seeing properties and beautiful homes that were designed differently, and like, that intrigued me. Mm-hmm. So from my dad, I already got intrigued by that from my dad. And all my brothers and sisters did the same thing. So then I moved to the United States. Now, when I moved here, the first job I could ever work, since I didn't have experience here or whatever, was a collector.
Okay.
But even with my accent, I was such a good collector, they offered me a job in the mortgage department. I was like, am I that good, really? So then that's how I got introduced to mortgage.
Okay.
And when I started working mortgage, I said, I've never been on this side of the business. I know the realtor part, and I know how valuable that is, but I didn't know the mortgage side. So I started doing mortgages there, and I think the market went through a rough place where we had to get laid off. They started changing things. It was less originating. We started doing loss mitigation because a lot of people are losing their homes. Mm. And then my husband started getting a desire to move here to Washington, and he got a job offer here. Now, because the market was so crazy, I had an open heart to move to Seattle. So I moved to Seattle and I started originating loans, and that's how I ended up at Movement Mortgage.
Man. See, I never knew you had like already exposure to kind of like the real estate industry out there.
Yes.
Are there any, what kind of parallels or contrasts can you make between, at least, you know, I know it was a long time, but kind of how the real estate industry works in Kenya versus how the real estate industry is here? Or
so,
actually, what's the process like as far as purchasing a home? Is it similar or is it very different?
It's very, very different, especially when it comes to closing in Kenya and closing here. When you close here and the property is recorded, you have the keys to the home. In Kenya, it's different. You have to wait a while before they give you the title, and they hold your money.
That whole time.
They hold your money for, I don't know if it's 6 or 7 months, they hold your money for a while before they actually release the title to you, man. Whether it's land or property. So it's a whole different process, and it's not as regulated as we are here. So you can be scammed easily there. So it's very complicated and very different, but the market has always been good. It's always hot. Mm. So it's a hot market. I can't remember. I know during COVID, just a little, it was slow just for a short while, but the market is always hot in Kenya. So the market is, and that they had their beautiful homes that actually I haven't seen
some of the homes. They're incredible.
And I haven't seen any homes that can compare to what I saw back then.
Yeah. Design wise.
Yeah. Design wise. Because I've been to someone's home where they had antelopes and giraffes and things like that. They
like
have a
living.
Yes. And they have the mansion with that. And I'm like, I haven't seen that here.
Yeah, we have laws for that. That's why.
Yeah, so it's a whole different.
Anyone with a giraffe here is probably going to be in some trouble.
Okay.
Okay, so let's get into, I kind of want to get into the process. But first, let's talk about the market here. Mm. Obviously, the market here is crazy. It's difficult for not only first-time buyers, but it's getting harder for second-time buyers,
yes,
too. You know, I want to ask a question that's encouraging versus discouraging.
Because I thought about the market. I'm like, what can I say?
I mean, the market here has discouraged a lot of people from wanting to even participate in the process. And at least what I've learned just working here is that the ones that are willing to be diligent and kind of stick with, mm-hmm, it are the ones that end up getting the home. What have you noticed lately from whether it be buyers, sellers? What are some of the struggles that, you know, either side are kind of dealing with this market right now?
So with the rates being so low, it's a very good time for people to buy. Now, when you run into issues where you don't make enough to buy, there's an option of getting a cosigner. And I feel like a lot of people don't see the advantage of having a cosigner, or they're not educated enough to know how cosigning works and how they don't have to have the loan on their credit for the life of the loan. You could easily remove them from the loan within a year or less. And people don't quite understand how that works. So I noticed a lot of first-time home buyers miss out on the opportunity because of that. And I know that it's hard to find someone who can co-sign for you, but if you look hard enough, I've had people have told me, oh, it's impossible. But they come back 2-3 weeks later and they're like, I have a co-signer, I can do this, you know? So it's possible. Those who have the goal and they want to go to the end of it, I've seen people close. But also there's the buyer who qualifies, and you can see they can qualify, but they're trying to get a dream home instead of a starter home. And you're just like, the rates are not going to be this low for a long time. You better jump in and then either you sell the house, rent it out, and get another home. But they just don't want to, they're not open to that understanding. And they don't see the value of even being qualified, because not all people qualify, but they don't see the value. And then another thing is, something that worries me is, I'm like, you may not have that job a long time to qualify. Your W-2s might change next year. Your hours are going to change next year. So jump in now. And if it doesn't work out, you could sell the home. So those are the...
March 2019, I'm working for Cutter & Buck. And COVID, obviously, like, we're in the very beginning of COVID starting, right? And I lose my job in April. I find out I lose my job. I made the second round of COVID, so that made me feel good. Like, if you got cut the first round, like, you were expendable. For me, getting cut the second round, I felt like they actually valued me a little bit. But, like, millions of other people, I was without a job during a large stretch of 2019. Mm-hmm. Unlike most people who were cool with just getting that EDD money, I thought, you know, eventually this money is going to dry up. Mm-hmm. The money lasted much longer than I thought it was going to. I thought that money was going to dry up by the end of 2020. Mm-hmm. So my thought was like, man, I need to get on it. Like, I need to, you know, really be, I need to stay in kind of that mindset of like finding a job. So I need to stay sharp with, you know, my interviewing skills, cover letters, still put out like resumes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, every once in a while, I'd have an interview here or there. And then one day I got a message on my Instagram, which is funny because I don't use Instagram now anymore, which is really funny.
That's weird.
And so I got a message from you saying, hey, I should pull up the message, but it was something, you know, something like, hey,
I have a gig for you. I see a gig. I was like, he'll probably understand gig better. And so was, marketing.
Yeah. And so I'm kind of like, okay, like, huh, this is the first time anyone's contacted me through Instagram.
And I had to say it on the comments because I was like, media you might stuff. Not read my DM.
Yeah. No, I missed the DM, but I caught the comments. So okay. I was like, huh, that's interesting. And so then, you know, of course, I did like my back research. It's like, okay, mortgage company. Like, okay, like, I understand that vertical. And so we talked a little bit more. That led to an interview where I met with June. I talked to RC. I think Randy was on the call. Needlessly to say, I killed the interview.
Yes.
That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here now. But the part you didn't know is that when I was let go from Cutter & Buck, during that stretch, oh no, was it 20? Yeah, no, that was 2020 because I proposed to Natasha New Year's Eve 2020. Okay, yeah, so got to get the timeline right because the timeline is important. Okay, so March 2020, lose job. April, I move into my parents' house, right? Granted, I told them in March I was going to move into their house. And the rent that they wanted me to pay was like the amount that, like the average rent amount, right? Working for Cutter and Buck, I could cover the amount. But when I moved, when I literally moved into the house, I had no job. I just had the EDD money coming in. And that was the other reason why I needed to like get to work in, just because I couldn't rely on that money. But when I moved into that home, one of the goals of mine was financial literacy, learning as much as I could about how money works. I didn't necessarily want to learn just terms and understand. I wanted to learn how to actively be a participant in the money, wealth, finance game, like understanding how all these pieces work. So the first step to that was getting my credit in order. Now I'm doing all these things, not understanding. I'm preparing myself for a home purchase. I'm just trying to be just more responsible, right? Wow. And financially literate. So I'm getting my credit in order, trying to get that together. And then working here, I would have, you know, none of you probably realized it, but every day I would ask one of you just a little question about the home purchase process. And it probably, to all of you, probably seemed like I was just asking a random question, but most of those questions pertain to my situation in particular, because I wanted to learn as much as I could, you know, with June being here, you know, with yourself, Leanne, Doug, Randy from time to time. Like when I got here, I was like, aha, there's a lot of knowledge as far as financial understanding in this office. So at the very least, if I don't come out of this with a home, I'm going to be better equipped to understand my own finances. So I spent a lot of time learning as much as I could from each and every one of you, just listening to your conversations with clients, listening to your conversations with each other. To learn just about wealth and money and credit and debt to income and all of those things that play into it.
So what would you say is different between buying versus renting? Because this is a big topic, especially in Washington. It's so expensive to rent. What are your thoughts on that?
Honestly, it's probably mostly mindset and maybe peace of mind that you get. I mean, you know that your money isn't necessarily being, I don't want to say thrown away. You know, if you, not everyone is fortunate enough to have a place to live. So if you are fortunate enough to, you know, pay for a place to live, whether it be rent or own, that is, you know, a blessing. But kind of understanding that this money that I pay every month is essentially paying something off where I can reap the benefits on the back end long term. You know, these are long term things, you know, this is kind of, you know, with rent, it's a year at a time because you're thinking about your lease, like your lease ends and then where am I going to go? With a house, you know, you're looking at 5 to 10 years where, you know, am I able to pay this off in 5, 10 years? Then what can I do with that money afterwards? But the crazy part is like for me, the amount of money I was spending in rent every month and what I pay now for a mortgage, the amount isn't off by much. So it's like, you don't see, I mean, a couple hundred dollars is incredible relief for anyone, especially now. But, you know, if I were to tell you, you could pay $2,500 in rent or, you know, save some money for a year, 2 years, and you can pay $2,200 a month. It doesn't sound like a whole lot, but really that speaks to how expensive rent is here.
Oh, my God.
So if you're going to be paying it, why not pay it towards something that you can own later on as opposed to just figuring out I'm just going to be here for a year at a time? So a lot of it is just mindset. You know, I'm investing in something with the money that I'm using versus I'm just paying this monthly bill because I need a place to live.
And also generational wealth.
Man, yeah. No, that is really like that's kind of how I got into my home. Like my, as you know, my like situation was very unique, but at the same time, spending more time thinking about kind of my situation, it really speaks to exactly that, like generational wealth and how families do that and use yes. homes to do that. Like this was an this home purchase for me was an educational course, not only for myself, but a lot of members in my family and understanding how wealth gets passed down through assets.
Yep.
So that like this whole, I mean, I went through a lot, I went through a lot with this purchase, but a lot of it was education. Most of it was education and really learning about myself and the very little that I knew about like how wealth works. Like this, it's, I mean, it's a big, all of this really like the overarching theme is that a home purchase is a, it's a big picture item. Like it's, it's something that is like a 5 to 10 year project. It's not something that's year to year for most first time home buyers, right? Like this is a huge investment. So looking at it that way, how can I take this large purchase and turn it into money later for generations down the line? And I learned how that worked through this purchase. So it's really, it's true what they say about generational wealth and how homes are a fast way to create wealth. Like it's really true. And I learned how it's done with this purchase.
Right. So why was it important for you to own a home?
Well, I mean, well, I'm the one editing this video, so I can bleep stuff out. So if I cuss, it doesn't matter. I'll just bleep it. And usually when people hear swear words, it's funny. But honestly, like my family doesn't really own it. Like we don't, we didn't really own anything that wasn't a true asset. You know, all things, even some things that you purchase that are assets, they come with some level of liability. But a lot of the things that we were purchasing, cars, jewelry, gold, things of that nature, those things, if you lose them, they're gone. If they're damaged, the value could depreciate immensely. But something like a house, we didn't really have, one, we didn't have a lot of people who could educate us on the process of purchasing, but no one talked about how a home can be used as an asset to catapult the next generation forward. So, okay, great, great story. So this was my first education into home purchasing. It was a conversation I had with my father, God bless his soul. So he was talking to me about my grandmother who is like my best friend, right? So I never wanted to hear anything negative about my grandmother from anyone. So he was explaining to me how she ended up selling her home. Now this home was like, every black family has that one home where everybody goes Grandma's. To, right? Grandma's house is like the center of the universe for the family. She had this home in Bellevue. You could walk to, Sammamish High School, right? Like you could walk to the golf course that's over there. Like this property now, the value of this property now would be insane, right? And at the time, it was the only property on a lot that you could build three on a lot. So it had huge value, right? Now this was back in 1994 when we had this house. My grandmother ended up, I don't want to say selling the house. She almost, she sold the house because she signed the paperwork, but she wasn't aware of what she actually was signing. Yeah, she wasn't fully aware of the process. And so at that age, you know, being in her 60s, I think at the time, not everyone else was kind of moved into their own homes. Someone wanted to purchase the home to, you know, knock down the trees and then build on the lot. And so for her, she's understanding I'm getting X amount of money for selling the home. Not understanding that if I hold the home, I could then, I have the rights to the property. My grandfather bought the rights to the property, so he could build on the land. But when he passed, she became the owner of all of it, and she sold all of that away. My father, not having owned a home, but being pretty savvy and understanding, you know, contracts and wording, he read the contract afterwards and was like, she should have never have done this. Like this, she's going to lose out on hundreds of thousands of dollars later because she signed this. So for me in that moment, I, you know, every once in a while I'll drive by the house just to like think about like, you know, what that could have done for, you know, my grandmother had five kids, five girls. all of them have kids. So, you know, needless to say, they all could have benefited from that. All of us could have benefited from that, even if that was just a rental that our family still owned. And we were all just splitting the money somehow. Like, that was a huge asset that she sold, not understanding what she was selling. So for me in that moment, it was like, always understand the contract, read the terms and conditions, and once you have something that you can own, when it becomes valuable, hold on to it until you can maximize on that value. And a lot of that value comes so much further down the line than you think. So for me in that lesson, it was, you know, just because someone's offering you $100,000 today, you should look at that more as it's probably worth $300,000 tomorrow. So, you know, if you're not hurting for the money right away, which she, I mean, she wasn't, she was retired, you know, all, like I said, all of her children moved out, had kids. She was kind of just in the home by herself. So it was kind of one of those things where she, you know, she'd get the money. She would, you know, travel, go from, you know, state to state, seeing all of her grandkids. But the financial side of it, like what that could have done from a wealth standpoint, we lost out like immensely with that deal. So for me, I always kept that in the back of my mind. Like, I need to have something like that. And when I do purchase a home, I'm not going to let that happen to me, so that when my daughter is my age, she can purchase the home, or she could, you know, manage the home if we rent it and she can get that money. That could be something she could do when she's younger. Just, you know, there were so many opportunities financially for our family to benefit off of that home, and we lost out on that. So looking at it now, you know, having that opportunity to kind of do that today in my position is like, it's incredible. It's really incredible.
Makes me think that it's very important to hire an attorney when it comes to purchasing or selling, so that you can understand the terms and conditions.
Yep, it was a sell by owner, so it went straight to the owner.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of kind of the practices that are going on with a lot of the older homes in, you know, Seattle Central District and South End. You know, there are a lot of older families that, you know, don't read well, don't comprehend a lot of the jargon, and they're getting bombarded on a daily basis
and
with
targeted.
I mean, that's a whole nother
conversation.
Yeah, we can get into that. But I mean, it kind of just speaks to, you know, having something of that type of value where so many people want it is important, because it's going to hold value and create more value later. So if you're able to scrape up some money to, even if it's not just yourself, if you can get a group of people, you know, to kind of put a fund together to purchase a home, that's an asset that everyone can benefit from, you know, down the line. It's not something that we're all going to see money from right now. We're all going to be broke by the end of closing, you know, but later on down the line, we all may be able to do something with this, because 5 years from later, if we sell this home and split up the money, we all could have gotten the money we wanted, or at least the money we put in back and then some. And we maybe move in, you know, my fiance is like, now maybe, you know, if we rent the home, we can move in a family that we know that needs more space. You know, we have friends and families who they've got kids and need more space. So for me, it's like, you know, I own a home now. So if I were to, you know, pull money out of the home, pull some equity out as a down payment, purchase another home, I could rent this out to a family that we know that's not going to tear up the house, but definitely needs a home. So now I become, you know, someone that can offer help to another family with this. So it's, like I said, it's so much bigger than just owning a home. Like, this house is so much more than that. Like, I'm able to help aid and assist so many people with owning a home. Like, it's so much bigger than just I own a home.
Interesting. And I think you've moved ahead of me. I was going to ask you how your financial goals have changed from a renter to a home buyer, and now you're talking investing. So how has that changed your goals and your whole picture on life?
It's like anything in life that you try for the first time and you don't know if you can do it or not. And then once you do it and you find out that it wasn't as bad, or that you're maybe a little more knowledgeable than most, or that you have the, well, you know what I learned is that I have the team of support needed to make these kind of moves. And so honestly, like, for me, my mindset has changed from, I felt I needed to like sneak in to the party. And now that I've purchased this home, I'm in the party. And now that I'm in the party, I want to participate. So before, I felt like I wouldn't even be able to play the game of like investments and wealth and building like a portfolio and all those things. Like, all those things sound wonderful and everybody talks about them and they Google these types of things. But until you like do something where you're like a part of the game, you're not going to actually feel like you're participating. Excuse me. I feel like an active participant in like the financial game of life. Like, now I want to figure out, you know, after I purchased this home, my first thought was, okay, now what? You know, what do I do next? I put so much energy and and thought into like, just like, not even just the actual like process from start to finish, like years before that, really like wanting this. Like, I was renting the home, I was renting my parents' rental home, and like getting into that house initially was a struggle, because I told them I was gonna rent out their house, and 2 weeks after I agreed to move into their house, I lost my job because of COVID. So now I'm like, I have this weird space where like, I'm committed to, you know, paying rent. I'm going to pay them a fair rent. Like, they're not going to give me any kind of discount. Like, they're really going to make me pay like a real tenant.
You better Uber Eats or do something.
You know what I mean? So I committed to it. I said I was going to figure it out. I got into the house. And once I got into the house, my thought was, now I have to figure out how to buy this thing. And so once I was in it, my whole mindset the entire time was, I need to figure out how to buy this house. Like, I'm in here, I'm paying my parents this rent money that's paying the mortgage for probably this house and their other house. Like, I feel great about that because I'm supporting my parents, but at the same time, like, I need this money too. Like, I need to benefit off of this somehow as well. So if I can purchase this house, which would give them, which would essentially, you know, pay off the loan, whatever they owe on this house, give them some money on the back end, but we still keep the house in our family, that's a win all the way around. But the hard part for me was figuring out, like, what do I need to do to get there? And that's where you come in, right? Like, I had the motivation, I had the determination, I had the want, but the drive to do it, I didn't know which direction to go. So I needed your help to be like, am I ready? And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but I remember a conversation we had where it was maybe like for 3 months when I first started working here, I would always say, like, I'm going to buy a, like, obviously I'm going to buy a house while I'm here. Like, you can't not purchase a home when you work for a mortgage company, right? It'd be stupid not to take advantage of that. So, but I remember having a conversation with you where I was like, Sandra, I think I'm ready to start, but I'm not sure if I have everything ready. And I remember something, and I'll always remember what you told me. You told me, if you're ready, let me know, because once we start, we can't stop. So once we start, just be ready to go the whole way through.
Oh, wow.
And so at that point I was like, oh man, like, damn, am I really ready? Like, I don't know. But what that did as like a client, that let me know, like, I really need to get all my stuff together. And it kind of mentally prepared me for the process that things were going to move quickly.
Yes.
And they sure did.
They
sure did. And it was a whirlwind of a process. But, you know, I was prepared for it as best as I could be, you know, with, you know, just the tons of support from yourself, everyone at Movement, my family, you know, my fiance, my in-laws, my fiance's family, like, everybody was so supportive. My sister had just purchased a home like 3 weeks or 4 weeks before. So like, she was really encouraging about the whole process. And, you know, it's really cool to see, like, you know, within, probably five weeks of each other, and my sister and I both signed and closed on homes.
That's nice.
So like it's between myself, her, and our parents, we own three homes in three states.
Wow.
Right. So Washington, Nevada, Seattle, Las Vegas, and Washington, D.C.
Nice.
So when, you know, my sister, but like I said, talking about mindset, my sister, after I purchased the home, my sister and I, we have this mindset where it's like, okay, we've got three properties. So now what can we do? You know, our parents, like, you know, they're even thinking about renting their home in Vegas, purchasing another one so that they can have another rental property now that I bought their rental property. So this whole, like, our family buying homes during this time has really kind of spurred this level of education and kind of want to participate in like real estate investing, like or at least at the very least understanding how it all works, like wanting to purchase property and understanding like it's an asset. You know, obviously they all come with some level of liability, but you know, we all own some sort of asset individually, and collectively as a family we are worth, you know, well, I don't want to say we're worth a lot, I don't want anybody coming after us, but
but
you know,
even
we own some stuff, you know what I mean? And we have value. And that's really where, you know, that's kind of, you know, you can kind of walk with that. You
we
know?
Can now say your net worth is this much.
I'm not doing that. I think I've only told maybe like two or three people like the entirety of my deal just because I don't know why that is. I think part of it is like, well, no, I'll be honest. Part of it is like, it's like bragging, right? Like,
it is.
I mean, I'd be the first to say that I got the best rate out of any of you.
You did. You did.
If you are watching this video and you know me personally.
For nothing.
My rate is so good. And I'm never going to tell you what it is. I've told three people what my rate is, and their reaction each time is like, what the hell?
Me too. I was like, okay.
I was shocked. But honestly, what that speaks to is understanding the market, understanding the opportunity that's ahead of you, and really taking the initiative to get it done.
Right.
It took like a lot of money. I don't want to say like we got into a house without paying any money, but we had to really utilize the funds of our entire family on both sides to make it happen. But for them, which I learned, this is kind of like the beautiful thing that I learned out of that. With parents, you know, as adults, right? Like adult children, asking our parents for stuff is a little weird just because we're adults. So there's this weird level of like, I want to be able to do it on my own. But what I've learned with my parents and, you know, the same with my fiance is that as we get older, the ask from their kids becomes so much less, so much more and more less, like the things that they need. And there's a level of fulfillment that parents get when their kids need something and they can give it to them, right?
Oh, that's beautiful.
So in these moments, to have like these conversations with my in-laws and with my, you know, with my stepdad I've never had before, like these conversations about how it's important for them to set something up for their children when they're gone, to set something up for their granddaughter when they're gone, you know, all of these things where it's like, you know, hey, I need $10,000 for, you know, gift funds, which for me is like, it's a hard ask. I don't like asking for things, especially money from people, but to hear from my in-laws, like, we are thrilled to get, how do you need more to get this done? Because after we closed, they were so excited because to them, it's not about owning a home. To them, it's having the comfort and peace of mind that their children and grandchildren are going to be okay. And so that's what I learned through this whole process. So the money, like the amount is the amount. The money is the money. But what that, when you get older, what the money affords you is to give your family comfort and security. And that's what, you know, my parents and my in-laws were able to do for us with the money that they had saved over time. They were in a position to help us make this happen. Mm. And with a little bit of money that they gave us, we're going to be able to get a lot more money on the back end. So this interview is really more a testimonial to more people kind of leveraging the homes that their parents have to keep it in the family and to kind of pass ownership. You know, I learned that there's, you know, most families, that's what they do.
Yep.
If they own a home and they've got kids, when the kid is ready, the kid is going to purchase the home from the parent. They now own it, but the asset still remains in the family, and so does the value of the home.
Right.
So if you don't own anything, you have nothing to pass down.
True.
So now I'm, you know, in the mindset of accumulating things that I can pass down that hold value. And it goes back to the, you know, the earlier question of, you know, why own a home? You don't own anything. So if you don't own anything, you don't have anything to pass forward. It, you know, you're setting the next generation back. I want to have it to where the, you know, my daughter, my grandchild is two steps ahead of where I started so that they can get four steps ahead of where I finished. And that's kind of the understanding of how it all works. Like, you know, I bought the home, I feel great, but you know, down the line when my daughter's 18 years old, will I be in a position to, you know, hand this house over to her and she has a home? You know, obviously she could still live with us, but she will have something in her name of value so that now her worth on paper is a lot more, and she can kind of leverage financially through this system, you know, to get a little bit more. So it's like, you know, just I've learned so much about how the financial system works through this home process, whether it's talking with Chris, the credit guy, about how like I need to fix my credit before I even started the pre-approval, understanding, like having those conversations with the seller who happened to be my stepdad about the purchase price and like really negotiating like terms and conditions like a real buyer, but having to prepare my home like a seller because I'm living in the home that I'm getting ready to purchase. So I worked both ends of the deal, it felt like, with this purchase, and surprisingly enough, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
And it went very fast. So what myths did you hear about before buying? And now you know, you're like, oh, this is true.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, okay. I'll share the myths that I thought were true before I started working here. And then I'll share the myths that I thought were true before I started like my actual process, right? So one, there's always the down payment myth, right? So 20% down.
Wow, that's a big one.
Yeah, right? Definitely not true. And so when I first got here, I learned that 10% down or 20% down isn't true. 10% down isn't true, right? You can get into a home with, I think,
3.5 or 3%.
I was going to say 3%, you know, but I'm not the loan officer. I don't want to get in trouble. So,
not your fault.
Yeah, right. I know about the RESPA rules. I'm not trying to get anybody in trouble, but you can get in with as low as 3%. So with that, it's like, okay, I don't need to save as much money as I thought I did. On top of that, understanding how down payment assistance programs work. So I make, well, I'm not putting all my business out there, but I wasn't approved for the down payment assistance program. Part of that is because of, well, you would know the answer to this better. I think part of it was because I make too much, but then another part of it was because of the deal that we were doing. Right. So with that, the uniqueness of my deal kind of really blew up a lot of the myths about this process entirely, because what I learned through this whole process is that you can purchase a home. The way in which you go about it varies from person to person. And every single situation can shift while you're in the middle of like your process. Right. So that was kind of the amazing thing that I learned about this, that there are so many ways that you can get into a home, and none of them are the same.
No, they're not. And a lot of home buyers don't understand that. They hear stories from their friends and they're like, oh, but this happened to my friend. But your situation is different.
Yeah.
You actually got a better deal than the down payment assistance program.
Yeah, I know. I know. And that, and but see, but that's another part of it, right? Like most people would think I need the down payment assistance to be able to purchase a home of said price. If you don't qualify for that down payment assistance, there may be other ways that you can qualify. Excuse me, but not a lot of people. Not a lot of people know that because there aren't a lot of large lenders who are going to say that. Because if they were to say that, most people would come to the table as they are, as opposed to cookie cutter ready to go.
Right.
And so like somebody like me, like I, could you imagine like I bank with Wells Fargo. Could you imagine if I went to Wells Fargo and I said to them, hey, I want to purchase the house that I'm renting out of from my stepfather for a price that is a little below the appraisal value, and we don't want to use an agent to get it done. Like, they're going to look at, oh, and I don't have 20% down, and my credit score is below 700.
Right, right.
Yeah, good luck with that, right?
They'll put the sign closed.
Yeah. Like, and but to have someone like... To have someone tell me like, no, you're more than ready. For me, it almost, honestly, you know what? It made me feel like, damn, I should have done this sooner.
Right.
Granted, like, I don't know if I would have gotten like the rate. I don't know if I could have gotten a better rate than I did. But just understanding what was needed to make it happen, I had all those things well before I actually needed them. I just had no idea that these were the things that I needed. I'm over here thinking I need to save all kinds of money. I need to, you know, make more money to, you know, raise the pre-approval amount. And like to understand, like, you know, it's everybody has to work together. You can work with your seller to get some things done. If you, you know, if they've got an agent, work with the agent to try to get the deal done. With the loan officer that you have, like, stay in community. That's the one thing that I found so incredible about this whole process is I never really felt like one person told me something that another person didn't know. So if Title called me and they need something from me, but they've already told Sandra and they've already told the guy who's helping me with my home insurance, like everybody knows what's going on, so that I don't have to call two people afterwards and say, hey, I just sent this to them, just so you know. Like everybody was working together, and that's probably why everything was moving so fast.
It moved fast.
Which honestly for me was helpful because I need the pushing and the encouraging to like get it done. So some people may feel like, God, I've been sending these forms every single day, but you know, just send it again. If they ask you to send that, you know, statement over for the fifth time, just send it over the fifth time, because that fifth time may be the last time that they need it. And that could be the very last thing that they need to verify before you're closed. Like you don't know what underwriting needs to close out the file. And so whatever your LO asks you to produce, just produce it, because they're trying to get the file closed for you as smoothly as possible. You know, that doesn't always happen. You know, be ready for, you know, the pivots. You know, you may have to write an addendum or two or four or five like myself, but it's all necessary.
Yes, because you didn't have a realtor.
You know, that, and that's kind of like, that's the other thing too. Like I, not working with a realtor and purchasing a home that I'm renting, I got to get rid of the housing bid, like the bidding wars. Like I was fortunate enough to not have to participate in that. And then there wasn't any back and forth between my realtor and like the seller's realtor who, you know, lived in Vegas. So that could have been a whole nother thing where the seller's in one state, but the agent they have is representing them in this state. It's a disconnect. Like it could have been a whole lot. So I exchanged one difficulty for another one, but ultimately it all led to the same place.
About home inspection. Did you learn anything from the home inspection? Not the appraisal, the home inspection.
No, I think I waived the inspection.
Oh, you did?
I think I waived the inspection. Did I? No, I did not waive the inspection. Yeah. Okay. Now that I was trying to think, did I waive the inspection? I learned. Well, okay. So, so the when you're inspecting, it's different when you're living in the home that you're gonna purchase, mm-hmm. and then on top of that, it's your parents' home, right? So like you could imagine if your parents give you something, they're gonna tell you everything is fine with it. Like there's nothing wrong with it, right? They're gonna tell you everything they just fixed. Everything they just upgraded, like they got all the dates on that. Like it's perfectly fine. Granted, you haven't seen this house in 4 years. Like you guys have been living in a different state for a while. So during that inspection, like I guess more so what I learned are the different aspects of your home that play into an inspection and how that plays into the price. So mm-hmm. I guess I was fortunate to where the seller is family. So if there was something that needed to be fixed, mm-hmm. they would just do mm-hmm. it. I guess at the same time, like while I was living in the home, like the dishwasher went out. So because like, it's my dad, like, you know, we just went 50-50 on the dishwasher. You know, we needed a new fridge, just bought a new fridge, went 50-50 on the fridge. So like, it was a little different, but at the same time, like, I think what that inspection created was, at least for me, was a level of communication with my stepdad where, you know, hey, I know this is what you said, but this is what he's telling me. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, it kind of, you know,
uncomfortable.
Yes, but in a good way, you know, mm-hmm. uncomfortable conversations are good sometimes. But in those conversations, like for me, it sounds crazy, but like I got to like, you know, it's like my own man, like, no, like this, he said, I know you said you repaired the roof in this year, but the inspection said we need to probably, you know, touch it up in the next so and so years. So it's one of those things where like, you can argue with me all you want, but mm-hmm. it is what it is. Like, and in the reality of it is like, it's kind of one of those moments where you're the seller, I'm the buyer. Mm-hmm. This is not father son right now.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's kind of the weird gray area with all of this where like things like inspection, the appraisal, right? Like him having one idea of the appraisal amount of what it's going to be, me having another idea.
Was his higher?
It was within range of what it was. Oh, okay. It was within range. What I will say though is there were some realtors giving him bad numbers. I will say that.
Well, they're way over.
They were over what it came back.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
By like 30 or 40,000.
I'm not surprised.
But me having knowledge in the real estate industry, I was able to tell them like, look, they're inflating your numbers because they're giving you the amount that they believe they can sell it for, not the amount that the state is going to appraise it for. Mm-hmm. You know, I could sell my used car right now for more than it ever would be right now because used cars are at a peak as far as value. That doesn't mean the car is actually worth that amount. The car could be a piece of junk, but I can sell it for a lot because there's a need for it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the same thing. A realtor, there's a need for this market right now. It's a, you know, pretty significant size home as far as lot goes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to get a lot of value for it. You could build two on a lot here. Like, of course, you're going to inflate the value. Right. The problem is that if they say they can sell it for, you know, 700 and you sell it for 620, whose fault is that extra 80? You know, so it's those conversations I had to have a lot of those conversations where it's like I'm dispelling a lot of myths and beliefs about the process. So it's kind of like, no, that's not true. Like, I know you think that's what, you know, we're doing. That was 4 years ago. It's a different situation where I'm a first-time home buyer. Mm-hmm. A first-time home buyer purchasing a home is much different than someone who's purchasing a second home. True. And that second home was purchased 5 years ago when the market wasn't as volatile as it is now. So that's kind of the other thing too, is like understanding the market really is going to help you kind of prepare for the process because the market changes and shifts every 6 months, it feels like, just based on trends. And so if you can get in on the trend, great. If not, you know, stay encouraged. You know, I honestly, like, from, I probably was like in and out with this whole process for easily 6 months. Like, just, all right, I'm gonna go for the pre-approval. I'm gonna wait. Okay, I think I'm ready now. Nah, let me learn a little bit more information. Like, then when I finally did it, I couldn't get out. So you're just, right. You gotta go.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't want to get my credit pulled again and have my score dropped. I don't want to lose out on my earnest money.
Right.
And I'll be kicking myself in the butt if I lose out on this rate. So
the rate, yeah.
You got to, like, once you jump, you're falling and you got to keep going until you get to the ground. And it's scary because, you know, every time I would get like a message about closing or we're almost done, even when I got an email saying that we were like done, I even had to ask June, like, you know, I got an email from Title saying, you know, we got recording numbers and closing docs, like, congratulations. And I asked June, hey, like, am I done? Like, done, like, completely finished? And she's, yeah, congratulations. You can go spend money again.
Right.
So, like, even through that whole process, you're kind of holding your breath until you get the keys. I already had the keys, so it's a little different for me where I was just waiting to hear from some. Yeah, I had to wait to hear from somebody like, you are completely,
it's over.
And so even then, like, I was still working with Scott on the
insurance.
The insurance hadn't been pulled out of my account yet, but I'd already signed all the closing docs. So in my head, I'm like, am I going to lose the house because I don't have home insurance yet? Like, I know you need home insurance to get a home. They won't let you get a home without home insurance. But just staying, like, I guess that kind of just showed how focused I was during the process and just really, like, staying on top of, like, that fine line of not overspending, ruining your credit, and kind of just
not buying shoes.
Really, that was the hardest thing. Like, I could buy anything else, but, like, finding out I couldn't buy shoes for like 45 days. Luckily for me, there wasn't anything good that came out, so it was like a blessing in disguise. But I tell you what, the second I found out I could buy shoes again, I went looking.
Oh no. So a big thing that I had with a previous client is the appraisal. Did you have to put down your pictures for the appraisal?
Okay, so the appraisal was actually really funny because I was on a Zoom call when the appraiser came. I was on a Zoom call with all of you when the appraiser came.
Oh.
So I was savvy enough to have my fiance lead the appraisers around the home.
Okay.
And I don't know if I should share this because I thought it was a helpful tip, but my Natasha is just the most warm, bubbly person, right? So in my mind, before the appraiser came, I'm reading articles about how to get like the most, like, of like the highest appraisal, how to prepare for an appraiser and stuff, right? And so I'm reading all these things, like, you know, clean the house. So we had the cleaning lady come and clean the house 2 days before, make sure the lawn is well kept. So the landscaper came, you know, a week prior. But when the appraiser came, I had her show them around the house just because, with, you know, kind of a favorable personality, my hope was that they had like a more enjoyable experience,
right,
so that they would give us more of a favorable amount or they wouldn't ding us for certain things. So there were a few things that the appraiser suggested that I purchased to kind of help with the value of the home. And, you know, he allowed me to do that and send him photos of it because it wasn't anything major. It was just like small little $5 things you can get from Home Depot or whatever. But
oh, that was a good appraiser.
Yeah. And so then the next day he just wanted me to send him the photos, and I sent him all the photos, and, you know, it came back. They came in, they were really quick, they were fast. But I mean, like I said, my fiance spent most of the time with them, and the amount came back, you know, it was a really nice amount.
Yes.
It was a really nice amount. That amount will allow my family to make a few moves in a few years for sure.
Love it. Thank you so much. This was very enjoyable.
This was enjoyable. This was enjoyable. I did way too much talking.
No, it was good. I actually, you know what I loved is when you talked about your parents and what they said. I almost cried. I was like, oh my God. I don't think everybody's parents like that. Yours
they
is unique.
I mean, they don't. Well, part of that, I mean, I bring that out of people. Like, I will say that. Like, I have a way of kind of bringing that level of like sensitivity and I guess maybe like self-awareness out of people as to like the purpose for what they're doing. I never really care as to people's what. I really care more as why. You know, obviously you can give me, you can gift me equity in the home, but if you gift me equity in the home and you want me to pay it back on the back end, that's not necessarily a gift. But if you can explain to me why you're giving me, you know, the gift on the back end, and it's not necessarily for me, it's for my child, like, okay, it means a little bit more, right? But like, I never would have learned any of these of this unless I had those uncomfortable those uncomfortable conversations where I needed to ask for more money for closing, or I needed to, you know, change up something with another addendum and have a conversation about like, look, I know I said it was this, but now it's this and we're changing, you know, like all those conversations are difficult. But the reason why everything kept working is because my parents' why and my in-laws' why was always much greater than just the amount of money that they were willing to give. And that's the part I didn't understand until like the end of it. Because I'm, my hesitancy was this conversation I have about money and how like there, how the value of money is much more than it actually is. So to ask anyone for any amount of money, the ask for me is so much bigger than just the amount that I'm asking. But when someone is willing to give you more than just the money, like I'm giving you the money, but what I'm what I'm giving you access to with this money is so much bigger than just the value of the money itself. That's the part I was missing, because I'm so hung up on the amount of money I got to pay back. I'm not understanding the gift that they're giving to my family.
Not just to you, to generations.
And you don't understand that until like you have a lot of conversations where it's like, okay, like now I get it. And so for me, what that, in a beautiful way too, like what that did is it broke a lot of like myths and beliefs I had about asking family for money. You know, that's something that, especially with Black families, like that's something we just don't do.
Is it a man thing or Black family?
Yeah, it's a, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit of both. Like as a man, there's definitely like part of me that wanted to be able to do all of it on my
own. By yourself.
But the reality of it was I wasn't able to. So like there's like.
And that's okay.
Yeah. You have to kind of have that conversation with yourself. You have to be real with yourself. Like there's only so much that I can do. Like I tried my hardest to write a purchase agreement on my own. Right.
You hand wrote it.
Yeah. Like I, you know, I'm like, I'm going to all you these hand different.
Wrote everything.
I, you know, I was willing to do whatever it took to make it happen, but it got to a point where I realized my desire to do it on my own was impeding on like the process itself. So if I actually wanted to get it done, I was going to have to get out of the way and enlist the help of so many others.
You have to get out of the way.
Which is hard for me sometimes because I'm so good at a lot of things that I feel I'm capable of doing it all on my own. When in reality, sometimes I'm going to take too much time doing it on my own when I could just ask for help and get it done right away. So I learned that as well. Like enlisting the help of others will get things done faster as long as you're clear with what it is that you need. And that's something else I learned through this process is being very clear and concise with what it is that you need. Because if I'm vague about what I'm asking.
And we don't know what to give you.
Well, what I send you like as a loan officer isn't going to work. Like you won't be able to use what I'm sending you. So if I'm saying to my in-laws, like, hey, I need a statement to show proof of funds for the gift letter. Well, if they just send me a screenshot of like their bank statement from their phone, that's not going to work. But I need to do a better job of saying, hey, can you go on the computer? I need you to log into your actual account, print it, but put the header and footer on there. That's the only way that they're going to verify it. And if I have to sit on the phone.
You said header and footer.
I had to learn all these things, right? So like if I have to sit on the phone with them and talk them through that, then that's what I have to do. But it, it helped me learn how to be very clear and concise, but also having those types of conversations with them. So now I feel more comfortable having like more like serious financial conversations because I've already done it before. Like I've asked you guys for I've asked you for $10,000. I asked you for $12,000. Like, it's not that hard for me to have a conversation with you with like, hey, I know like you need $2,000, but can you wait like 7 more days until I have it? As opposed to like, oh my God, they need, you know, it's crazy how, you know, you go through a process and when it's complete, all of you almost don't realize how many myths you believed until it's over. And it's like, damn, like I thought it was going to be like pulling teeth. And it wasn't. Like, there's struggles, like it's difficult sometimes, but for the most part, it's not
bad.
It's as difficult as you're willing to make it. It's as difficult as you're willing to make it.
God, so many lessons you put in here. Shoot, we're gonna have to cut it.
Well, I'll just put it in my own podcast. We'll just cut this now and I'll just save all the good stuff for my own content.
No, it's amazing.
You should wait until the questions I have for you.
Oh, okay. Are we going to do it the same? Like, are we cutting and then moving in?
We can keep talking, actually, because now that I think about it, I think a lot of my friends and my audience would really benefit from this conversation as well. And so many people have been asking me, like, Joe, do another toothpaste. Where's the toothpaste? And my whole podcast, honestly, it's perfect that I have you here. Mm-hmm. So we could just look at, well, do you want to do a closing before I do an intro for my podcast?
No, you had so many values and lessons. I want to actually ask you if you can just do one lesson per, like one topic we did and cut it up as the topic for my class too.
Okay.
Because my class once, and I can't play the whole interview.
So. You just want me like just one gem? For the
yes,
class, like
there's so much. I was trying to keep up with all the gems. I'm like, okay, hold up.
Yeah, it's the gift and the curse of a Virgo, right? Like being like way over analytical and really like breaking down like the
but
whole
it's
process.
Beautiful. It's very beautiful.
I have a way of taking thoughts and putting them into words that people can understand. So that's probably more so of what it is. I guess the one. Okay, no, I've been thinking about this. So yeah, here's the one takeaway from all of this. I want to phrase this correctly because I know what avenues this is going to go out on and I don't want anyone to get in trouble. I don't care if I get in trouble.
I know. I was thinking about that with my questions. I was like, should I take it this way or just keep it?
Because I don't want
mainstream.
I don't want to. Yeah. Like, I don't want like this to be like a call out to just black families and stuff.
I was trying to avoid that.
Young people, millennials especially, one thing that we have at our disposal that younger generations and older generations don't have is we potentially have parents and grandparents who own homes. And with that, they are a fast track to you doing the same. And without understanding how you can become the owner of that home, you may feel that you have to purchase a home outside of your family. My question to you is, why get rid of that wealth when you can keep it within the family and accumulate more later? So the biggest thing for me would be before you spend the time to look outward for a home, look inward within your own circle and your own family to see what is possible. And it may be as little as a simple ask in conversation. You may have people who are dying to help you, who have been waiting for months and years for you to ask them for help for something like this. But your pride or your ego or whatever may get in the way of that. Don't let that be the case, because as easy as you can become discouraged after that conversation, I guarantee you will be just as discouraged after your first offer gets declined. And your first offer most likely will get declined. And so will the second one and possibly the third or the fourth. So you kind of have to be prepared to be uncomfortable. You're going to be uncomfortable this entire time. You know, find comfort in being uneasy for 45 days.
Wow.
You know, sit in that and be okay with, you know, be okay with that, because this whole process is uncomfortable.
Yes.
You're going to feel like you don't know what you're doing. You're going to feel like you're sending the same things over and over again. And most likely you are, because you haven't sent the right version. But ultimately, if you're lucky enough to have a great team of people, lean on them during those struggles, because they will be the ones to help you out. So if you're feeling like, I just don't have the time, like, there'd be times I would tell you, like, you honestly, you know, you never really made me feel like I had to turn in things at a certain time. You always made me feel like I just had to turn it in. So with that, there's a level of comfort that it's already kind of crazy. Like, this whole process is already kind of crazy, but I don't have someone making it crazier for me. Like, they all, like, it was always encouraging. Like, it was always an encouraging nudge. It was never like, I need this right now. It was either I need this right now because underwriting is on my back. So I need some help from you to, you know, help me. Or, you know, this person is ready to sign off on this for you. I just need this to push it through because everybody's ready to go. So there was always a reason as to why you were pushing me and why the moment was uncomfortable, which kind of set me at ease. Like, you're still going to be uncomfortable, but at least you know why. So there's a plan, there's a process, and there's an end. There's an eventual end. And that's kind of the thing. Like, you're going to be uncomfortable, you're going to be uneasy, but if you can kind of sit in that for 30 days and get everything done, eventually it's going to be over. And when it's over, you'll feel this incredible level of relief. And I'll tell you what, it took me 48 hours for me to, like, really accept that I had just purchased a home. Yeah. It took me a while. Like, I had everybody I talked to was congratulating me. I went to the bank to send that final wire to title, and the lady at the bank was like, wow, congratulations, that's wonderful.
We're all congratulating you.
Everybody that whole day was congratulating me. My in-laws were excited. My mom was excited.
I think you
excited.
Didn't believe us, because I remember I texted you, I was like, congratulations, and you just, like, blank.
No, I didn't.
It's like...
Because I didn't know what to feel. You know what I mean? I didn't know what to feel, because, like, I was so focused on getting whatever was necessary to finish that my mindset was, it's like, you know, like, if you're playing in, like, a, you know, I'm a basketball player, it's like you're playing in, like, a championship game. Like, it takes a moment for you to kind of, like, snap out and realize, like, the culmination of that entire season. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm getting to closing, those are, like, the final minutes of that game. So, like, it's a very, like, I almost kind of locked in more and became even more serious because now I'm feeling the pressure of the closing date. I'm feeling the pressure of, you know, the amount I need for closing. Like, I don't want the loan to have to get, like, I don't want closing date to get pushed, have to repull my credit. Like, I need all of this. You know, it's like having the lead in the game, and I need the, you know, the buzzer to go off with us still having the lead. I don't want to blow this lead. So once the buzzer sounds, everybody else is celebrating, right? The confetti is falling. Everyone's cheering, hugging. And I'm, you know, I'm standing there in the middle of the court with the basketball, like, it's really over. Like, it's really over. Like, I can completely, like, I don't have to, like, get back into this mindset again. I can completely.
Wow.
And so there was a moment where I was in the car and I just let out the loudest scream. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, I think it was more of just, like, it was a scream of, like, completion, and just it was over. But I think at the same time, like, there was definitely a lot of ego in that. Like, you know, there was a lot of, like I don't want to say, like, middle fingers, but, like, if there was ever, like, If there was ever like a time where you've ever felt like people slighted you or doubted you, or if you've ever even doubted yourself, right? Like that might have been more of what it was. Like I put so much on myself to get this done, and I knew what this would mean for me just as a person to get this done. And I know how I would look and how I would show up in rooms and show up to people as a homeowner with the home, you know, with the amount that it's worth. And with that, after I got it, it was kind of like, you know, it was just like winning a championship. It's just like, you know, I did it. Like I told y'all I was going to do it and I got it done. Right. So now what? Not only did I get it done, like I got like the best rate. Right. I got, you know, there's equity in the home. We didn't have to move the home out of, like, I'm in a great area. Like
I
won the championship. I got the trophy. I got the MVP trophy. And, you know, the whole parade is coming. So it was definitely a process. But, you know, like I said, it took a lot of being uncomfortable and, you know, a lot of long nights and early mornings to get it done. But that feeling of like just... you can't really say anything to me anymore. Like you could, but like, I feel like I'm a participant in the game now. So if you're not a participant in the game, like I'm not going to look down on you, but like I'll encourage you to get in.
Right.
And now I know how, like I know a way in. That's kind of the other part too. Like once you find a way in, help others find a way in too.
Right.
And you know,
which is something a lot of people don't like to tell the people the secret of their success.
This and really the secret is that there is no secret. There's just different ways of doing it. That's really the secret. You know, right. Google can find you five different ways to get to the same destination,
so
but they're all going to get you there. Mm-hmm. Some take longer than others. Some go through other, you know, areas that are uncomfortable, but you're still going to get to the same destination.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone purchasing a home, it's just like your start point is different than everyone, but the destination is always going to be the same. So, you know, understand your journey, understand your route and your process. And, you know, once you're ready to get in the car and go, take off, because once you got to get to the destination, once you get to the destination,
take off.
Once you like start going, you don't want to U-turn and go back home, because you're going to be so discouraged that you spent all that time, all that time in the car on the road. You probably spent money for gas, food, all of that. And it's all wasted for what? So when you're ready to go, be ready to go and stay committed to the destination. Stay focused, stay locked in and get to that finish line, because, man, that feeling is, it's an incredible feeling. That scream was an incredible scream. Like it was wonderful. Luckily I was in my car by myself. It was nighttime. Nobody could
see
me. That
would have been so funny.
What? It would have looked crazy. I would have looked nuts.